Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin in a moment and discuss what amounts to a declaration of war today on South Sudan by the Northern Sudanese leader General Omar Bashir, himself a war criminal indicted by the International Criminal Court. Sondra Hale, who has been visiting, studying and working in Sudan for the past 50 years, joins us to discuss an impending outbreak of war against the world's newest country over contested oil fields the Chinese have developed. Then we'll look into the so-called war on women that has been fanned by an overblown spat between Hillary Rosen and Ann Romney over working mums versus stay-at-home mums. The president of the Institute for Women's Policy Research, Dr. Heidi Hartman, joins us to discuss the real issues obscured by this fatuous debate, which is that women are not paid equally for equal work. And given that 95% of women in America don't have rich husbands and work for a living, the Ann Romney flap is not a women's but a class issue. Then finally, we'll speak with Joe Hagan, who has an article at the Texas Monthly, Dan Rather was right about George W. Bush. We'll revisit the pivotal 60-minute story in the 2004 Bush-Kerry campaign that could have contrasted the war hero Kerry with a draft dodger who, because of family connections, received favorable treatment to enter the Air National Guard. Joe Hagan will answer the mysteries still surrounding the story that killed Dan Rather's career and helped re-elect George W. Bush. And joining us now is Sondra Hale, who is a professor of anthropology at UCLA. She's been studying and doing field work and living in Sudan for over 50 years. She's the author of numerous books and articles, including Locating Sudan Studies, Gender Politics in Sudan, and Sudan's Killing Fields, Perspectives on Genocide. Welcome to Background Briefing, Sondra Hale.
Thank you.
And the newest nation on the earth, South Sudan, is about to go to war, if we are to believe the Northern Sudanese President Omar Bashir, who today, addressing a rally at his party headquarters, said that his main goal is now to liberate the people of South Sudan from its rulers. That's tantamount to a declaration of war, isn't it?
Well, yes, it is, but they've been making various statements for some time now that seem tantamount to a declaration of war. They've moved their troops down to various border areas, down and up, both sides, both South Sudan and Sudan, and have declared opposition parties who are soft on the occupation of Heleg, which is where the oil fields are, have declared them to be betraying traitors to the state and so on. So they've been using extremely strong language, both sides actually, but especially the North.
And of course, Bashir told the rally that the story began in Heleg, but it will end in Khartoum or Juba. What do you make of that?
Well, probably that might, I don't know about ending in Khartoum, but amassing troops and moving towards Juba is a possibility. But we have to remember that that successive governments controlled by the North were not able to defeat the Southern Sudan in all of these many decades. So I'm not too worried. I am worried about about the loss of lives and the waste that this will create. But I'm not necessarily worried that the North will be able to defeat the South. What I'm also concerned about is that the remnants of the Southern Sudan forces have united with some of the Darfur guerrilla elements, who have in turn then are talking about how they're going to march on Khartoum. And that would have made us laugh a few years ago, except that one of the guerrilla groups did invade Khartoum. I mean, they were wiped out. They took 3,000 military figures, soldiers, and actually tried to cause damage, tried to take over the Khartoum government. This has never happened before. But they were wiped out. But it's not beyond the realm of possibility.
But prior to this declaration of war, if you will, by the North Sudanese on the new country to the south, which used to be part of Sudan and was recently split and South Sudan recognized as an independent country, and you have the oil fields that are in the south that were developed largely by the Chinese, but the oil pipelines are in the north, and the particular oil field over which they've been fighting, the Heleg oil field, That's pretty much generally recognized as North Sudanese territory, isn't it?
Oh, it's borderline, and it's not. No, it definitely isn't, and it is the main oil field. But, you know, these borders are disputed, so both sides have claimed it.
I see. But
they haven't redrawn the boundaries, not that that will necessarily solve anything, but they haven't redrawn the boundaries, and so it really is, fallacious to talk in terms of whether or not Heleg belongs to the north or belongs to the south. It's very fluid and very complicated.
Well, but the fact remains that you have the oil's in the south, the pipelines are in the north, and at this point the south has cut off the flow of oil, which of course is cutting off the revenues for both North and South Sudan. I mean, clearly both sides have an interest in making some kind of a peace deal if their main source of revenue is oil. And I imagine the Chinese who have invested billions in developing these oil fields, they want peace.
Of course. And we've been saying, when I say we, I mean Sudanists and Sudanese have been saying for some time that this is just war talk because people have everything to lose. They have nothing to gain, really, from going to war again, because it'll be another intractable struggle. I can't think that it would be anything else. That is, unless something very strange happens, such as the Chinese infusing, either South Sudan, what would be South Sudan, with enormous amounts of weaponry, and some other power infusing the North with a lot of weaponry. That might change the balance of power or whatever. But right now, as things stand now, none of us can imagine that either side really wants to go to war. But they're playing a very dangerous game because they're getting closer and closer and closer. The North declared that the Southern Sudanese that decided to stay are really almost enemy aliens, and you know, just lots of very, very hostile acts have been going on, especially from the north towards the south, although the south has not exactly been innocent in this matter. They've been amassing their troops in these various border areas for some time and have made their own threats.
So Sandra Hale, again, professor of anthropology at UCLA. She's been studying and doing field work in and living in Sudan for over 50 years. And she's the author of Sudan's Killing Fields, Perspectives on Genocide. Is there any possibility that the Chinese could build pipelines to the Indian Ocean, taking a southern route, as opposed to being dependent upon on the pipelines across the territories of North Sudan?
Well, the South claims to have set up some arrangements with Ethiopia and Kenya to be able to put pipelines through their countries in a cooperative way. But most of the experts have said that this might take 5 years. So the question is, you know, what's going to happen in the interim? If they could build those pipelines overnight, then some of the issue would be solved. Not for the north, of course, which would be without oil, but the problem for the South would be solved. They could reopen their oil fields and become a fairly productive country for a while, although it's estimated that those oil reserves in the South that everybody is fighting over are only going to last about 10 years. And unless the South manages to build up other ways of generating revenue, they're going to be in trouble, period.
But since the independence of South Sudan, the northern-controlled Sudan armed forces have been bombing the Nuba Mountains, and that has led people like George Clooney and John Pendergast and others have had, as you probably recall, they were arrested in front of the North Sudanese embassy in protest. Why is there this sort of endless desire on the part of the North to keep killing their own African population?
Well, they're all Africans.
Right, but the darker-skinned Africans, then.
They're all about the same color. But at any rate, we won't quibble about that.
What's the divide, Christian versus Muslim?
No, it's not that either, because in the Nuba Mountains, for example, we have Christians and Muslims in the same family. They're nominal Christians, nominal Muslims, and very, very mixed from one village to the other, and as I said, from one family to the other. So it's not really a Christian-Muslim conflict in this case.
But what is it then?
Well, there are resources in the Nuba Mountains, and the Nuba have always been, for many, many decades, have been a thorn in the side of any administration, starting with the colonial powers, with the British, and they've been resistant to every single government. It's really hard to know what's going to go on in the Nuba Mountains, but it is at the hottest spot now in Sudan. The government is carrying out horrible atrocities. The people who are trying to raise attention, whether they're celebrities or not, I think are doing a fairly positive thing. I mean, none of us like to see celebrities playing as if they are, political experts. But on the other hand, the Nuba Mountains is an area that, hardly anyone in the world knows anything about. And so it was a matter of attracting attention.
Well, I think a lot of people, of course, probably saw the television pictures of George Clooney getting handcuffed. And, you're telling them what the real issues are here, and that's very helpful. Sondra Hale, again, anthropologist at UCLA, expert on Sudan, where she's been studying, living, and doing field work for the last 50 years. Her new book is Sudan's Killing Fields, Perspectives on Genocide. So the UN Security Council have been told that Sudan and South Sudan are locked in a logic of war by African Union mediator Thabo Mbeki and UN envoy Haley Menkarius. Do you think that there's any diplomatic solution here?
Well, eventually there might be, but I think they're going to be locked into the state for some time to come. On the, quote, brink of war, this could go on for a decade. And with, with each day, we might read the BBC and there may be another, act that looks like a declaration of war. On the other hand, I suppose there's a chance that armed hostilities could break out as we're speaking. But my guess is that won't happen, that there'll be these smaller skirmishes that will go on. There will be several kinds of diplomatic attempts. Most of them will fail because there hasn't been a really, even though in 2005 there was something signed called a comprehensive peace agreement between the North and the South, but it failed because Darfur was not in the mix. And this time I think that various diplomatic efforts could fail because the Nuba might not be in the mix, or Darfur. And so unless there is a more comprehensive series of peace agreements, I think that any of them are bound to fail, if not initially. And that is, we might be able to see a ceasefire for a while, but it will break down as it did before. There are so many things that haven't been dealt with. The racism of northern government towards its various outliers, its marginal areas, just to name one thing, which is pretty major. And then the constant fear that these marginal areas have that they are going to be taken over and forced to convert to whatever, not necessarily Islam, but forced to convert to the cultural and political hegemony of the central government. So I'm not very hopeful with regard to diplomatic attempts, but of course they have to try it. I mean, you can't not do anything. And as a Sudanist, it's very, very difficult for me to decide what kind of role I can play in this. And writing about it is about the only thing I can think of right now. I have been trying to help internally displaced persons, IDPs, in the capital. I've been to Sudan at least two times since I last talked with you. After the government attacked the Nuba Mountains in June of 2011, people either fled into the hills in South Kordofan, or they fled to the main towns. And so there are tens of thousands of refugees now, internal refugees, in the capital. So some of us, many of us, have been attempting to alleviate some of that pain and suffering as well. But that, you know, that was something. I was supposed to go to the Nuba Mountains, by the way, 4 days before. We didn't actually have a departure date, but we might have been in the Nuba Mountains, my research partner and I, when the government attacked. So I'm very involved, very committed to the Nuba cause, and I'm trying to help in any small way I can. And I can only help in Khartoum because I wouldn't even be allowed to go to the Nuba Mountains at this point.
Well, just in closing, UN Ambassador Susan Rice said that, you know, of course she was in charge of Africa in the Clinton administration. Yeah. She basically was saying that hardliners on both sides, they've captured the situation, both in terms of the hardliners in Khartoum and the hardliners in Juba. Do you think that's the dynamic?
Well, for now, but I do know that the people that I know in Khartoum are very, very distressed over the various moves that the northern government has made. I mean, they're distressed not only for the south and for Darfur and for the Nuba Mountains and what seems to be a never-ending series of conflicts, but really concerned. I'm talking about liberals and progressives. They're very concerned about their own state with this, by state I mean status, with this government that's talking so tough, because they're not only talking tough towards these marginal areas, but they're talking tough towards their own population living there in the capital and in other areas of northern Sudan, this flexing their muscles about the particular way that they're going to be enforcing Sharia, religious Islamic law.
Sure. And this is a leader who's been indicted by the International Criminal Court.
Exactly.
So, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Well, thanks for talking to me, and good luck with any other interviews on this subject. I'm glad you're covering it.
Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Sandra Hale, a UCLA anthropologist. She's been studying, living, and doing field work in Sudan for over 50 years. She's the author of Sudan's Killing Fields, Perspectives on Genocide, and her latest essay is available at the Journal of Middle East Studies, titled And Then There Were Two, What is Sudan Now? And we're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about what the real issues are in the so-called war on women.
Raise your flag with the guiding star and sing a song of freedom with joy. For peace, liberty, and justice shall forevermore reign. So Lord, bless South Sudan, so Lord.